Welcome to Lookhead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms. I'm a loony London liberal. My friend Lockwood Phillips is an arch conservative from North Carolina. Once a week, we link up to discuss the world. This week, we talked about terrorism, the British elections, and James Comey. Hope you enjoy listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. This afternoon, of course, we're joined by Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And yes, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate our guests, are actually our foreign editor's sleep schedule, something about midnight there where he lives in London. But still fresh news as we begin the program this evening here on Viewpoints Around the World. And with that, Tom, good evening to you, because it is evening as we speak. First quick question, and we'll get into more details about the experience and environment of London, but how's your weather?
Well, it's been a bit wet this week. It's not too bad today. I was out campaigning yesterday, and it was absolutely pouring, and I got soaked to the skin standing on street corners.
Isn't it unfortunate that you don't have the benefit of TV advertising or radio advertising, for that matter?
No, they have to listen to me shout at them.
Okay. Well, we can do that easily here as well. Tom, real quick question before we get into other issues, particularly national issues and international issues. Yesterday, of course, recognized here at the Talk Station and other locations around the country being D-Day. And it's an important day for us because for the Yanks, it was part of the largest armada and invasion ever. And I had a very fascinating interview I had done many years ago with a local teacher, as a matter of fact, who was a Higgins boat driver and had some fascinating and really harrowing experiences. My question to you is, what kind of relationship does D-Day have there in London or England, the United Kingdom, or even in Europe in general?
It is certainly remembered, but more on the really big anniversary dates, like 25th or 30th or 50th or something like that, where they, you know, bring out everything, the fireworks and heads of state and everything else. And that really is a big deal. I have a little story about D-Day or about Normandy. Mm-hmm. I was on vacation there, a long weekend with my family about 15 years ago. We decided we head off to the beach with buckets and spade. And we were just digging away on the beach when we heard a band. And I thought, this is very unusual. Why is there a band just over the horizon there at a beach? And we climbed up over the dunes and found ourselves in an American cemetery. We had been digging on Omaha Beach, and it was a high school band playing at the cemetery next to Omaha Beach.
Wow.
Apparently, there was an American high school band playing there every day.
Really? That you've informed of something we didn't realize. This is very interesting. All right.
It was very touching. It really did bring, you know, a tear to the eye.
You know, it's an astounding story. And we here at the Talk Station, me personally, do not want to let that moment of valor and sacrifice to be forgotten. And that is the case, really, quite frankly, for all military events. But it's just a particularly poignant event in our shared history. Tom, I won't belabor that, but I want to move on to some interesting aspects. And of course, let's focus for the few minutes here on the United Kingdom. We'll start with, quite frankly, I'd like to start with the terror attacks. There, of course, we've got terror attacks in France as well. But recent reports, and you've actually shared this with us, related to the arrests. I was listening to information earlier today about the most recent event last week with the car attack, for want of a better description, and the stabbings that were taking place in the vicinity of the London Bridge area, which, by the way, seems to be, again, a very popular location. Back to something you said earlier in the previous attack with in the Manchester bombing, that in spite of all the arrests, many of them might likely be released. In fact, I heard that of the many arrests that were made just recently have resulted in releases. But what is the sense, the feeling there in London and particularly the United Kingdom, but definitely London, related to the most recent terrorist attacks?
Well, I mean, to say they're upset is an understatement. They are very upset. They are not frightened. They are carrying on as normal. I've said this repeatedly, and I'll say it again. It's not that London is so much, well, I suppose London is used to them. They've had terrorist attacks for decades and decades from different groups. London is an international capital. It attracts people like that, and it always will do, and we just have to cope with it. For years, we were under attack from the IRA, and now we're under attack from jihadists. It comes with being a great international capital city. It's part of the bad baggage.
All right, I will accept that, but the question begs to be asked, why? What is to be accomplished? What has it, you know, what is perceived as being the goal of these terrorists, other than trying to strike fear? But for what purpose, particularly in London and the United Kingdom?
To try and force Western countries to change their policies, on things like Syria, Iran, the Arab-Israeli conflict, things like that.
Well,
that's what it is.
Well,
some of them go a bit further. They do want to impose Sharia law. It's part of some mad scheme for Islam to take over the world. I mean, there are mad people everywhere in the world, and there are mad jihadists just as there are mad Christians and Hindus and everything else.
And by the way, when you say mad, I'm thinking crazy, not mad as in anger.
Crazy.
Okay.
Yes, crazy.
Right. But here's my question.
Insane.
And really, I don't know that you would have an answer. I definitely don't have an answer. Here, for example, yesterday, and I've got a leap over to another country, Iran, the target of jihadist efforts. And you mentioned Syria and our approach. One has to wonder, in the case of the IRA, one understands that that was a dispute between the Catholics and the Protestants and the independence of Ireland, particularly Northern Ireland. But the thing that begs the question is, what has anybody, you know, other than just purely anarchy and chaos, these people really are not accomplishing anything, and might they possibly face a major reaction? Could this, in fact, have an influence and impact on Islamic Western relations?
I'm not sure, but I think what they are accomplishing something. They're accomplishing terror and
they are
undermining the values that we hold dear. I mean, things like free speech, freedom of religion, freedom of travel, things like that are very important to us.
Right.
And because of their actions, those are having to be cut back. We're having freedom of speech curtailed. We're having freedom of travel curtailed. And that is creating a backlash against the governments and acting as a recruiting sergeant to recruit more people to the jihadist cause. So in a way, they are achieving things. And I think we have to be very careful to protect our rights.
Okay, we're going to get into this in relationship to the elections, but very quickly, and we've got about a minute to go. Prime Minister Theresa May announced that she was not going to let human rights, or I guess rules and regulations and privileges and a Bill of Rights, if you will, stand in the way of stopping the jihadists. In fact, she's expressed some really strong reactions. How are they being received there in the UK?
Well, depends on which side of the political divide you're on.
Okay.
I mean, if you're on the left side of the political divide, they're being strongly attacked. If you're on the right, they're being strongly applauded. It's a very much a right-left issue. Theresa May, this is nothing new with her.
I understand.
She was Home Secretary for 6 years before she became Prime Minister. And during that time, she tried to introduce a lot of legislation which was suspending human rights.
Okay.
She failed. She failed to get a parliamentary majority or support from parliament over it. And now that we're having this attack and she's prime minister, she's going to have another go at it.
All right. I want to get back to that in just a moment because it'll bring us to the topic of the British elections with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And of course, to remind you, Look Ahead Radio heard on radio stations around the world, including here on the Talk Station. You're listening to the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week beginning the 12th of June. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. It's back to business next week for the British and Irish parliaments after general elections in the British Isles. The French parliament, on the other hand, is still dissolved until after the second round of elections on Sunday. Opinion polls indicate that President Emmanuel Macron's En Marche will reap the benefit of their young leader's honeymoon with the French voters and win an outright majority. It's Russia Day on Monday. The date is a public holiday and marks the beginning of the end of the Soviet Union and its replacement by the Russian Federation. This year, opposition leader Alexei Navalny has called on supporters to stage mass anti-government protest rallies against widespread corruption. Navalny was detained earlier this year for organizing anti-government rallies and plans to run in the 2018 elections against President Vladimir Putin. Next week, Congress starts hearing on President Donald Trump's proposed 2018 budget, beginning with Trump's plans to cut foreign aid by a third and the State Department budget by 28%. In Missouri on Monday, there's a special legislative session to consider stricter regulations on abortion clinics. Governor Eric Greitens called the session after a federal judge ruled that abortion clinics need not meet standards for surgical centers. Vladimir Drinkman, perpetrator of the world's biggest computer hacking crime, will be sentenced by a New Jersey court on Saturday. Drinkman conspired to steal passwords and 160 million credit card numbers from more than 15 companies. He faces up to 30 years in prison and a $1 million fine. In Britain on Tuesday, former Indian politician and billionaire businessman Vijay Mallya is in court on extradition charges. Mallya is wanted in India on charges of contempt of court, money laundering, fraud, and income tax evasion. British Airways cabinet crew are planning a four-day walkout from Friday over poverty pay. The threatened industrial action follows hard on the heels of a computer failure which grounded BA flights worldwide. In Finland on Thursday and Friday, there will be a summit of environment, maritime, and fisheries ministers to discuss the development and security of the Arctic. The meeting is being co-hosted by the European Commission and the Finnish government. In Colombia on Wednesday, guerrillas from FARC are scheduled to surrender another 30% of their weapons to UN observers. The original deadline to complete the surrender was May 30, but it was extended at the request of FARC commanders because of camp construction delays. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned after this message for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. Yes, the portion has been pre-recorded because it's midnight where he is, but it's still early in the evening for us, an opportunity for us to hear fresh news about what's happening in the United Kingdom and around the world. Tom, a few moments ago, we were talking about Prime Minister Theresa May and her efforts to suspend, if necessary, certain privileges and rights there in the United Kingdom in an effort to stop the jihadist. And I want to get to the events, political events there in London, particularly with your mayor. But before I do that, what is the opinion about the Internet? Because that has been one of her concerns here of late. This I'm asking a kind of for a broad response, but she and other countries are a little concerned about how the internet providers are basically being used by these terrorists. Am I correct on that? And is there a concern that there might be some constraints yet to be applied?
Yes, she very much wants constraints applied to people like Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
She feels that they have not done enough to stop their vehicles, if you like, or their companies being used as vehicles by the jihadists to radicalize young Muslims in the UK and elsewhere in the world. And she wants restrictions placed on them. This was talked about before the election campaign. It's going to become an issue. It has become an issue during the election campaign and will continue to be an issue whoever wins.
Okay.
There's strong pressure to try and do something with companies like Facebook.
Okay. Then the other question is, let's stay with the election for just one more moment. It is a close election. Has the terrorist attacks had any impact on the conservative versus labor delineation? Because the conservatives were double-digit leaders prior to recent polls, now single-digit, very close race as of last week. What impact has the most recent terrorist attack there in London had? And we'll touch on the topic of the potential terrorism event in France and Iran. But what impact, any at all, on the poll data at this point?
Absolutely. It's now 1% between them.
Wow.
It could go either way.
Why is that? How has Labour used this most recent spate of events to its advantage? And I have to, I apologize for using that word, but now they've used it, for their messaging. How have they used it?
Well, because as Home Secretary, and that's the cabinet minister responsible for the police, Theresa May cut the number of police by 21,500.
Okay.
And the Labour Party is saying, how can you possibly expect the police and the counterintelligence people to keep track of all these people, the jihadists, if their numbers are being cut? Mrs. May is absolutely insisting it has nothing to do with the number of people working in the police and intelligence, that is not the issue and has nothing to do with it. Nobody believes her.
Wow.
And as a result, Labour is picking up support.
What does
the other thing is, there are a lot of people who think, as Theresa May said, enough is enough. Jeremy Corbyn is saying, yeah, enough is enough. We've lost the war on terror. We need to speak to people like Hamas. We need to speak to people like Iran, and we need to negotiate an end to this.
All right. What impact does this have on the discussion and the future of Brexit?
At the moment, Brexit has become a back burner issue, which is very odd because the election was called over Brexit.
Right.
Mrs. May wanted an increased majority so that she could go into the Brexit negotiation saying that she was a strong, stable leader with the Parliament behind her, Parliament and the people behind her. But in fact, Jeremy Corbyn has managed to flip the agenda very well. Everyone thought he was going to be totally annihilated. They thought it was unelectable. But he's flipped the agenda to focus on social care issues, the fact that the Conservative Party has underfunded the National Health Service, which is a major sacred cow, and things like security.
And
he's really picked up an awful lot. The other thing is that Mrs. May has come over not as being strong and stable, but as weak and wobbly.
Okay,
whereas Jeremy Corbyn has come over as quite likable.
All right, here's very interesting. Very quickly, because I want to move to the City of London. Jeremy Corbyn has a lot of comparisons to Donald Trump. He can be extremely, incendiary in some of his remarks, but that doesn't seem to be a problem.
I don't think he is as incendiary as Donald Trump.
I think he's more
in
so.
In fact, I think his policies are.
Oh, okay.
He has a way of presenting those policies.
All right.
Which make him much more sound more reasonable than he probably is.
He's made some very, very critical remarks that have even embarrassed his own party. We won't get into that. You've shared that with us in the past. Let's move very quickly to the issue of London. And since I did bring up Donald Trump, let's talk, which timely and very, very, it segues beautifully into this conversation with London Mayor Shadiq Khan, who, by the way, is a Muslim. And interestingly enough, said and explained on a recent program, I think it's called Britain Today, or maybe it's London Today, with Piers Morgan, that he said that because of the reduction in the security forces and police homeland or homes police department or police officers, that that's the reason they're having these problems in London. He seems to be of the same mind that you are, that this is not really unique to London. And of course, that was not something that President Trump was overly enthusiastic about. So my first question to you is, how is the mayor of London doing politically and publicly? And what about this relationship between the president and the mayor of London?
Well, Sadiq Khan is a much loved mayor.
Okay.
He was elected by a very large majority. Everyone thinks he is doing a fantastic job, and they all dislike Trump for attacking Sadiq.
Okay.
There have been renewed calls for the invitation for a state visit to be withdrawn as a result of the attacks on Sadiq. One newspaper drew a comparison between the attack on Sadiq and what Trump said about Manchester. And they had two pictures, one of the mayor of Manchester, who's a man called Andy Burnham, and one of Sadiq. And Andy Burnham is a white Englishman. And underneath the pictures, it said, Trump praised Manchester and the spirit and said he would stand shoulder to shoulder with the people of Britain after the Manchester bombings. He said something completely different about Sadiq. Guess which one is Sadiq, and guess which one is the mayor of Manchester, i.e., which one was brown, which one was white.
And
that is how it's being interpreted here.
Wow. So they're seeing this as an issue of race and not politics.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of Look Ahead Radio and LookAheadNews.com. By the way, tomorrow's news today at LookAheadNews.com, which you can join by just simply logging on. And with that, Tom, let's just wrap things up here with the issue of Sadiq Khan and President Trump. Obviously, Mayor Khan would like to rescind the invitation for President Trump to visit, well, London by default, Parliament. Actually, he's visiting Parliament and the British government, but by default, London. What is the chances of that in light of the upcoming election, which, by the way, is going to be conducted tomorrow? And I want to get a speculative vote count from you here in a moment. But what impact will this have with President Trump and Theresa May and Parliament in the United Kingdom?
I think that if Jeremy Corbyn is elected, or if the Labour Party is elected, then there's a very good possibility that the invitation could be withdrawn. If Theresa May continues as Prime Minister, then it will definitely not be withdrawn. It will go ahead.
All right, you are sharing with us something that is really quite stunning. There is a good possibility that Theresa May not remain as Prime Minister?
The difference in the opinion polls today is 1%.
That's amazing. And yet, just a few weeks ago, it was a double-digit slam dunk, and she was going to actually increase the majority in Parliament for her party.
Some people said it was 20, as high as 25%. She has not done well. As I said, she projected herself as the strong and stable figure, the bloody difficult woman who was going to go fight for Britain in the negotiations over Brexit.
Okay.
And she's come over as weak and wobbly. She's changed her mind on several things. She's refused to enter into any television debates. When you do see her on television, she seems to be nervous. You know, she's not done a good job in the campaign.
Okay, then what impact has, and I want to get to another issue with President Trump, what impact has the U.S. presidency had on this campaign?
I think Theresa May associating herself with Donald Trump has not been good for Theresa May. Donald Trump is a very unpopular figure.
All right. Well, let's talk about the president and the relationship with the Paris Climate Accords. Of course, we have to wonder why this continues to be of interest in Europe in light of the fact that European countries themselves have not been, shall we say, as engaged in the climate accord. They have on paper, but I question that relative to and I say this to all the participants. So what about that? What impact has that had on this debate and election?
Well, it just makes Trump even more unpopular. At the moment, it's Trump against everybody else in the world in terms of countries, obviously not in terms of people in his own country, but it's United States against everyone else in the world. It's completely isolated over the issue.
By the way, are folks paying attention there in the United Kingdom and in the continent about the upcoming hearings and in witness? We have a former FBI director, James Comey, who's going to be presenting evidence. I shouldn't say evidence. He's going to be speaking before Congress this week. Is there interest in what's happening there in the United Kingdom?
It's certainly in the press. It's not on television because the election is taking over everything. You know, okay. We're within hours of the election.
Right.
While people are voting tomorrow, Comey will be speaking before Congress.
Okay. And then before I move on to other items, I do want to talk about the UN Human Rights Council as well and the announcement that the U.S. may be pulling out of the UN Human Rights Council. What is your speculation on the outcome of the election? Now, granted, some radio stations will be hearing this around the world after the election is over. So with that caution, do you have a thought how this will turn out? Just very quickly.
It is too close to call.
Okay.
I think the biggest problem with this election is going to be the aftermath, because people are not voting for a party. They're voting against a party. Mm. Everyone is voting against, very similar to the American presidential.
Very interesting.
Where people voted against Hillary or they voted against Trump. And it's the same thing here. They're voting against Theresa May or they're voting against Jeremy Corbyn. Very few people are voting for a party.
Very important observation. Of course, with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. LookAheadNews.com is the website, by the way. All right, let's look at the other issue related to the U.S. before we move on to other items. I want to talk about France and Iran. The topic of the UN Human Rights Council, we've had our representative note that we might be removing ourselves from the Human Rights Council. How is that being received?
Well, it's being received, you know, people sort of shrugging their shoulders. They're expecting it to happen.
Okay.
Of course, it happened when Bush was president, George W.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in 2006. He withdrew. Now, in those days, it was called the Human Rights Commission.
Right.
As a result, probably of Bush's decision to take America out of it, it became the Council. It has changed. It's not quite as radical as it used to be. And in fact, Israel, which is one of the reasons that the United States would want to withdraw from it, Israel has actually said, we want you to stay in America.
Okay.
Because we need your help and support.
And has been very, very beneficial to Israel and other countries as well. All right, just curious how that is being received. Let's move to France. Two issues relating to France. One, of course, the terrorist attack. Well, pardon me. The attack at Notre Dame. I know that ISIS is laying claim to that, but there's really no indication. One would argue that whatever event takes place around the world that in fact sadly cost human lives, ISIS might just simply take responsibility and claim to have participated in it. But what impact is that having on France and other countries there in Europe?
Relatively speaking, it's a small attack. And it's certainly not having any effect on the election campaign, the parliamentary election campaign that's taking place in France at the moment.
Okay.
I don't think its security has become an issue. It already was an issue. Right. I don't think it's becoming any more of an issue.
Okay. And then
it looks as if Macron, Emmanuel Macron, the president, mm-hmm. is going to get a majority in parliament, a brand new party. But he's so popular that people are just rallying around his flag. They all love him. He's got a extended honeymoon. Well, it's not extended because it only just started, but they all love him. They love the way that he has stood up to President Trump. They love the way that he's young, charismatic, and dynamic, and they all want to vote for his party and give him a chance.
Interesting. And of course, I'm curious, what impact in Germany, because they are also facing an election. Do you hear anything? We haven't been getting a lot of news about the German election and Chancellor Merkel, but what impact is all of this having? And of course, this brings us back to the issue of Brexit, which was sort of the tipping point, if you will, for that and probably the U.S. elections, but the tipping point there and the in Europe. What influence have these issues had on Germany, for example?
Well, at the moment, Angela Merkel is way ahead in the polls.
Okay. All right.
And so the issue of Emmanuel Macron mm-hmm. Has helped her, because now she has a pro-European in the Elysee Palace. And we're going back to the the Franco-German axis.
Okay.
Right at the center of Europe. And they want to build on that. And I think Britain leaving the EU could actually help the strengthening of that axis. And they're talking about greater defense cooperation, greater political cooperation, all sorts of cooperation, which was being held back by the British.
Okay, so there's maybe some positives out of this after all. All right, I want to move to another item very quickly since we're talking about the continent. Let's talk about Russia and the Russian plane scrambling to intercept a U.S. plane in the Baltic. How is that being covered?
It's being covered. You know, it's interesting. Just a few weeks ago, Russian planes were scrambled to intercept a Swedish plane.
Right.
And if you recall, I think it was a few months ago that American planes in Alaska mm-hmm. were scrambled to intercept a Russian plane. A Russian plane also came within 10 feet of an American plane over the Black Sea.
So
Russian planes are regularly, over the past 18 months, have been flying up and down the British coast.
What is the
all the time being accompanied by RAF planes?
With about 30 seconds to go, what is the takeaway from this? Are they seeing this as a means of Russia trying to be bully, or an indication that Russia still is going to be a player worldwide?
An indication that Russia is laying stake to the Baltic region in particular, but okay. also the Black Sea.
Okay.
They're saying, we're back, and we are going to be the power in this area.
That's what I was wondering. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Come back to the issue. I want to chat briefly about Qatar and its relations with Saudi Arabia, and of course, now we've got to bring in Iran. With Tom Arms of Viewpoints Radio, and of course, with Viewpoints Around the World, and of course with Look Ahead Radio and lookaheadnews.com.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from lookaheadnews.com. They said Jeremy Corbyn was unelectable. They said he would lead the British Labour Party to electoral annihilation. They said it would be more of a coronation than an election, with a record-breaking majority for Theresa May's Conservative Party. But if a week is a long time in politics, then the 9 weeks since Mrs. May called the poll is an eternity. On the 18th of April, the ruling Conservative Party had a 17-seat majority and a 25-point lead in the opinion poll. It had a bloody difficult woman prime minister to lead the vital Brexit negotiations. They and their leader appeared strong and stable at a time in British history when those were the qualities most sought by the electorate. The opposition Labour Party appeared hopelessly divided. Changes in party election rules propelled far-left Jeremy Corbyn into the leadership. But two-thirds of his parliamentary party refused to back him. There were mass resignations and sackings from the shadow cabinet and a failed party coup. As I'm writing this, the outcome is unknown, and with debates and polls all over the place, almost impossible to predict. So what happened? The agenda was flipped from Brexit to welfare. The Prime Minister refused to debate. Jeremy Corbyn was revealed as still very far left, but likable, and not as loony as originally thought. Mrs. May was exposed as unlikable and weak and wobbly. The British public were revealed as tired of the Conservatives' austerity policies, and finally a string of terrorist incidents hit Mrs. May hard as Corbyn attacked her record as Home Secretary when she reduced the British police force by 21,500. Both of the two main parties have swung to the extreme left and the right of the political spectrum. The Conservatives used the opportunity of their massive early lead to push policies which would have been rejected as totally unacceptable in previous elections. Increased security powers, a tougher stand on immigration, a blank check for Brexit negotiations, selective state schools from age 11, and more austerity. Labour, on the other hand, believed it was going down in flames, and so it might as well revert to its traditional far-left agenda, which in the 80s was dubbed as the longest suicide note in history. Nationalisation of mail, rail and energy companies, increased spending on the NHS, police and welfare benefits, free university tuition, and an additional debt of $600 billion or $8,000 for every man, woman and child. The common sense alternative might have been the centrist Liberal Democrats with their proposals for some new taxes to ease austerity and a second referendum on Brexit once the results of detailed negotiations are known. But the first-past-the-post constituency-based electoral system employed by Britain worked against the middle-ground politician. As elsewhere in the world, most of the voters are in the centre-left or centre-right. Some are even dead centre. But in this election, they are so worried that either the extreme right-wing Conservative Party will win or the extreme left-wing Labour that the entire country appears to be voting against one of the other two main parties in order to prevent the other coming to power. The common-sense middle was squeezed into political irrelevance. Theresa May claimed she was calling the election to increase her majority and give her a strong base from which she could negotiate an advantageous exit from the European Union. Brexit and strong and stable leadership were the buzzwords. Jeremy Corbyn successfully flipped the political agenda to focus on the Conservatives' Achilles heel, a declining NHS, and nearly a decade of government cuts. This is one of Britain's most important elections. Whoever is in 10 Downing Street will be responsible for leading one of the most historic set of negotiations in British history. But there's another vital development. It had been believed that the far-left wing of the Labour Party had been killed and buried by Thatcher and Tony Blair. Wrong. Opposition to the austerity policies of a hard right Conservative Party provided the cause, and Jeremy Corbyn provided the leadership. The far left has risen from the grave, and the far right is there to challenge it. Extremist party politics are back in Britain, and the country is set for a return to the seesaw politics of the 1970s and 80s.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I want to go to the issue of Qatar. We've got about 5 minutes. So a good portion of this is going to be taken up by Qatar, Iran, Saudi Arabia. There's some really interesting dynamics taking place in the Middle East. Very quickly, can you explain them to us?
Okay, Qatar is basically funding a lot of Sunni Islamic organizations.
And who are the Sunnis?
The jihadists.
Right.
They're funding Al-Qaeda. They are funding an affiliate of Al-Qaeda's called Al-Nusra, who believes that they're also channeling money to ISIS. Now, when I say Qatar, I mean wealthy individuals
right.
in Qatar.
Right, but
the
here's
government
the
is trying to distance itself, but then there's always this interlinking relationship between wealthy people and the government.
Right.
Especially among the monarchies in the Arab world.
That's to be understood. Here's the real quick question. Iran has been also assisting Al-Qaeda, and I'm intrigued, and Saudi Arabia, of course, has fought Al-Qaeda, but Al-Qaeda has a strong relationship with Saudi Arabia, yet Saudi Arabia and Qatar are at odds.
No, I think you're wrong here.
Oh.
I don't think Iran is funding Al-Qaeda. It does have strong links with Hamas.
Okay, but...
But there's a very distinct difference.
Okay, but it's interesting. This is almost getting as confusing as the disputes in Syria. You need a scorecard to keep up with who's a friend of whom.
Let me just add another element into the mix, and that is that the United States and Britain together have a base in Qatar.
I know.
Big air base. I think it's 8,000 to 10,000 people are based there, and it's used as a central base for operations in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria.
Okay, real quickly, because I think the best thing to do is just explain the confusion without necessarily identifying the solution. But really, the quick question to you, Tom, and again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And remember, tomorrow's news today. Is this issue between the Saudis and Qatar, which involves, by the way, a major airline transportation and communications and travel between not only those two countries, but around the Middle East and with the rest of the world, is this simply just much ado and about nothing, or is there a potential of major confusion and conflict?
It remains to be seen. Qatar, along with Saudi Arabia and several other countries, is part of something called the Gulf Cooperation Council.
Right.
Which is a political and military alliance. Now, as we speak, there's a delegation going from Kuwait to Qatar to try and negotiate a solution to this current breach.
Okay, and then one quick question. What impact could this have on OPEC?
I don't know. Is the honest answer. I'm not certain. I think that they're quite capable of compartmentalizing it.
Okay, but the reason I asked that question, and it's... I like you, have no answer. It has not been raised. I've just not seen any discussions around this. I've seen more comments about the issue of international travel, as a matter of fact. And yes, remarks related to the relationship of the British and U.S. Military and Qatar. And of course, Qatar was a major staging point for Operation Iraqi Freedom as well. Tom, I want to finish up with a terminal cancer patient climbs Mount Everest.
Yep, Mr. Tothill.
I'm sorry, the
He's
name again?
Months. He's within months of dying. Ian Tothill comes from North London, and he decided, you know, I've got a bucket list, and on that bucket list is to climb Everest, and I'm going to raise money for the cancer charities. Wow. He has raised something like $50,000 climbing Everest, and as I said, he will probably be dead before the end of the year.
That is what a testimony to the human spirit.
I know. I think it's incredible.
Is it being covered well in the UK? Are they keeping up with it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That is a real testimony to the human spirit. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And again, remind you, Look Ahead Radio heard on this station and stations literally around the world. And for tomorrow's news today, go to LookAheadNews.com. As always, Tom, thanks for being with us this evening.
It's a pleasure, Lockwood.